How Not to Stay Out of the Snake Pit. Written by Ulf Gifu. Narrated by Rhea 314. Fandom, Nine World Series by Victoria Goddard. The Lays of the Hearthfire series by Victoria Goddard. Rating, general audiences, no archive warning supply. Relationships. Artoran Damara, a.k.a. Fitzroy Ingersoll, and Cleofer Kip Mdang. Kiri Kalakiri and Cleofer Kip Mdang. Chapter 1. Making Retirement Work. Retirement. How wonderful. Emilia Siamapa propped herself up against her pillows and pulled over the notebook and calendar from her bedside table. The sun was clear of the horizon and the room was full of clean early light, as clean as it got since her little cottage was swallowed by the outskirts of what she still thought of as the new city of Solara. As a girl, Emilio had woken up every morning in the poky little attic bedroom, now directly above her head, listening to birdsong and the rustle of the leaves. These days it was her son, Gus, nearly 30 if he was a day, and still no closer to moving out, who folded himself in under those sheltering eaves. She could hear him now, stomping about above her, with what he probably thought was a gentle tread, clumping down the stairs as considerately as he could. He was woken every day by the traffic outside, bicycle bells, shouts, a few early advertising cries from the stands at the corner of the road. Emilia noted this thought in her book, which functioned as a sort of diary, and also as a place to shake loose the odds and ends so she could keep her head clear for scheduling. For most of the past 60 years, she had carried the complex and shifting rota of the pages in the Palace of Stars in her head at all times. Now, she was retired. It was time to relax. She no longer had to be out of bed 2 hours before sunrise, nor commute up to spend her days in the huge, shadowy, and shabby pages' hall at the center of the palace. She could lie in. She could accept the lukewarm and weak cup of coffee that Gus brought gingerly up the stairs, and not wince when he spilled it on her bed linen, and wish him a good day up at the neck. At least Gus had a steady job now and was keeping regular hours, she thought as he left. Then remembered again that he had been working at the necropolis for nearly a decade. Possibly longer. Possibly even much longer. The years since he left school, since she went back to work full-time at the palace, were something of a blur for everybody involved, and not just because of the nature of her job. Gus had been 20 and 30, Emilia somewhere just over 50, for what sometimes felt like it could have been a half century at least. She sipped the coffee dutifully, because her son had brought it for her, and looked over her calendar. The neighborhood committee was meeting that evening, and she was host, so she would make a point of baking something tasty this afternoon. She had a list of projects as long as her arm, that they would be tackling together this month. The allotment allocation needed revisiting since the nice family moved in round the corner. And there were a series of complaints about the playground that Mira would insist on sending over. So those would have to be discussed, if only so that she could try, once again, that occasional small puddles were more of a pleasure than a slip hazard to a toddler. It was at least an hour after dawn, and there was really nothing more to plan for the day. Emilia snapped her notebook closed, finished her coffee, and, for want of something better to do, got up. Gus had refused to join the committee, pleading a long-standing commitment to spending most of his evenings out drinking with his friends from work. Emilia was glad he had his own friends, and relieved that he would not be in the house while she was organizing hers. Gus had Hari's trick for easy companionship, which she had always rather envied. She broke her fast slowly. The kitchen was the real glory of this cottage. Large, stone-flagged, the enormous old wooden table bashed and battered with years of family meals, friendly dinners, and minor local events. It was cool and comfortable, even as the day warmed up, and stayed that way when she opened the back door to let the fragrance of the garden flood the space, a fresh floral counterpoint to the warmth of buttered toast and the sharpness of her second, properly made cup of coffee. She was, Emilia realized, waiting for her husband to come in. Hari had spent his third night in a row away from home, and she was bracing for a crash. He meant well, and he was so charming, and undeniably good in bed, but he was also extremely bad at ending his intense temporary flings. She had, at one time, rather resented having to help him extricate himself from his distress when his affairs came apart, in the same way that she had struggled to understand why such a clever and articulate man found it so difficult to stay at the same job for more than a month or two. It had stretched her, making peace with the person Hari was, accepting that the price to pay for his steady companionship, those clever hands and that sparkling wit, was dealing with his ups and downs and drama. She was glad they had found their way through to a balance with each other. After all, he had learned to put up with her organizing ways, eternal mothering of everybody, and her devotion to her job. Sitting around feeling maudlin and listening out for her sweet scoundrel of a husband was no way to be retired, Emilia reminded herself, or at least not the way to have the sort of retirement she had set her heart on. She cleared away the breakfast things, cleaned and put away the few dirty cups, and then, abruptly, had had enough of being indoors by herself. She took her papers and the rest of her coffee out to the front garden, where the flagstones were still cool underfoot, but at least the air was warm and moving, and the bustle of the street was only half hidden by the soft curtain of vines climbing up the tall iron railings. The plans and minutes for the committee were, alas, already in sparkling order, and there was nothing else to add to her schedule or her diary. Emilia turned a few pages over and pulled out the next task, a long proposed script of an amateur theater production one of the volunteer groups wanted to put on in the park, and settled herself to trying to understand what the stage directions would require in terms of construction, possible damage to grass and trees, and the permissions and paperwork the troupe needed. The front gate creaked in a friendly fashion and scraped across the stones as someone came in. Emilia held up a hand while she finished making a list of materials, then looked up. It could have been Hari, or his latest lover, or both, in any kind of state. Several of her dearest friends over the years had come into her life through Hari one way or another. Or it could have been someone from a project, the amateur theatricals, the allotments, the neighborhood committee. Also in any kind of state. Emilia unknotted things for people, which meant she got to meet them at their most stressed. It was neither. To Emilia's surprise and delight, it was her sometime colleague and friend, Vioren Sayahasia, whom she hadn't seen for months. She hopped up to fetch another drink, a cushion for a second chair, a plate of cut fruit. Vioren was shorter, where Emilia was tall, compact where she was broad, and perhaps 20 years younger, and she leaned against the door watching Emilia fuss with a fond smile, unruffled by Emilia's need to get everything just so, and then accepted the drink and the fruit and the seat with unfeigned pleasure. "What brings you here?" said Emilia once they were settled in. "Shouldn't you be at work?" Vioren grinned at her. "I resigned," she said. "Again." Emilia blinked. "Isn't that getting to be a habit?" she asked. "I thought you said you liked it at the trading house." They had been colleagues, back when Sayamapa headed up the pages hall, and Sayahasia effectively ran the administrative office for the Imperial Service. Emilia had cheered when she had heard that Vioren had resigned for the palace, sometime after she herself had retired. The pages hall had been bad enough, but her friend had been stuck working directly for, and succeeding in spite of, the famously corrupt and slimy Lord Marilow, Master of Offices. "I did. Well, I do. But I resigned months ago," said Vioren. Her cheeks flushed. "I was, well, sought out by a competitor. And then I spoke with some of my contacts in the other warehouses, and they offered me a higher price again, and I realized I didn't have to work for any of them, if I worked for all of them on a project basis. Self-employed. They all pay me by the day now, on my terms. Emilia applauded. She couldn't help it. Viorin flushed even deeper. Thank you, she said. Anyway, it means I get to decide what I want to do, and today I wanted to come and catch up with you. Have you heard the latest from the palace?
No,
said Emilia, cupping her chin on her hand and leaning forward. After her retirement, she had deliberately kept away from the Sun and Glory and the other watering holes clustered up near the center of Solara, where her former colleagues drank. At first, she had wanted a clean break, a chance to rest and recover, and then when she started to get more curious, she had found herself feeling a little shy. The world inside the palace walls was so different from the world outside, its concerns and preoccupations so distinct from what she was increasingly coming to think of as real life. Emilia had not had to remember the correct degree of obeisance for a lesser prince from a distant world in nearly 2 years, nor yet dodge a fusillade of what was euphemistically known as frank and free discussion between members of the upper secretariat, nor navigate any of the treacherous undercurrents that swirled around whatever nonsense the priest wizards had dreamed up next. She was glad that she was retired. Well, said Viorin, you heard about the latest imperial secretary, right? Emilia groaned. What happened to this one? The short and calamitous careers of the various unfortunate souls sent up to trial as secretaries to the Glorious One was a running, and not all that funny, joke across the palace. Viorin grinned at her. You are out of the loop. This one's made it stick somehow, she said. He's been there for months now, and he's working with the dragon on total reform of all the ministries, with the Emperor's support. And word has it that the Ord Anatha are out on their ears, and General Revillain's retiring, and they ordered Mary's arrest.
They what?
The toad got away, of course, which is how I heard about all this. One of the trade factors knew I'd worked with him, came to ask what I thought happened, which is how I know that the palace is heaving like an anthill someone stepped on, and the upper secretariat is quailing in their boots. Viorin delivered this with a certain cheerful satisfaction. It was incredible. Mind whirling, Emilia snagged on a strand of passing thought almost at random.
Wait, doesn't Lord Marylow handle the secretarial appointments for the Emperor in the first place? She asked.
Viorin actually laughed. He did, yes. He set his own robes on fire with this one. I'm longing to hear how it happened. He was working through the most useless of minor nobles, you know, and never let the rest of us close to the list. I suppose every set can have an outlier one way or another, and eventually Mary must have stumbled on a second son who wasn't a complete waste of space. Can you imagine his face when he realized what he'd done? Emilia reflected that her friend deserved a bit of schadenfreude after the shit she had to put up with from Mary over the years, which made her wonder.
How is Siop Ndang taking all this? He must be delighted.
I have no idea, said Viorin, with a lightness that did not fool Emilia for a second. Things had clearly not worked out between them then, which seemed like a shame. Viorin had been very taken with their former colleague, and Siop Ndang had certainly never seemed interested in anybody else. Possibly he was just not interested full stop. She remembered how often he missed their lunches, how animated he grew when he was talking about his work, and mostly what was wrong with his latest assignment. Perhaps if Viorin had found some way to dress up as a piece of misfiled paperwork. Emilia lifted her drink to hide her amusement at the thought. Kiri's doing well, though, Viorin added. I wrote to her when I got the news. She's been promoted right up into the new private office. Emilia knew Viorin well enough to read the pain under this apparent lightness, too. Kiri Sayakala Kiri was a local Solaran girl, like the pair of them, but the similarities started and ended there. Kiri was impossible to dislike, with her charm and intelligence and sunny nature, but was equally impossible not to be aware of the advantages that had helped her career to flourish. She was younger than both of them, and had been self-evidently on the fast track to the upper secretariat from the moment they met. She had the right accent, and the right parents, and the right connections in the palace. Emilia had never had much ambition for herself, but she had been glad enough to get the recognition and the salary that Siam Dang had insisted on when they first met. She had also been de facto coordinating all the palace pages for decades without that recognition, and managing a boss who spent much of her time dosed up on various substances, and only occasionally and explosively interested in the work. Viren, who was ambitious, had had Mary actively sabotaging her on a daily basis, and had never been promoted or rewarded for her efforts at holding things together. It was good, all told, for both of them to be sitting here in this shady garden, well away from the snake pit. Emilia wondered whether to ask further after Siam Dang, whom she remembered fondly as a whirlwind of outraged organizational efficiency punctuated by odd, deep, quiet moments of thought. He had been endearingly earnest and dead set against Lord Marylow. If he had survived the turmoil this long, he was certainly up there, with Kiri organizing the private offices, too. Emilia doubted that even Princess Indergan at her fiercest could keep him out of a real chance to, as he always put it, fix the government. She glanced across at Viorin, who was looking thoughtfully at the dregs of her coffee, and decided not to bring up the man again. There was always a chance that he had finally managed to piss someone off enough to wind up at the sharp end of one of the endless palace plots, and Emilia on the whole would prefer not to know about that. "Kiri tells me they're hiring," said Viorin suddenly. She looked up. "More than that, she says they're disbanding the administrative office altogether, and she's looking for help setting up a replacement." "So of course she wants you," said Emilia, fighting down a twinge of envy. "She was making retirement work, damn it." "Will you go for it?" "I'm not sure," Fiorin admitted. I swore I'd never go near the palace again after how they treated me. I earn nearly twice as much these days, and my clients listen to me. But
you'd like the chance to dance on Mary's grave?"
"Oh, yes, that too. But, well, you know how Siam Dang always went on about fixing things. Well, I've been thinking. I had ideas. I know how to restructure an office now. It's one of the projects I like best, to be honest. And I doubt Kiri is going to find anyone who understands how the administrative office was supposed to work. So, I have been thinking about asking if they'd commission me on a temporary contract, like the trading houses. I like being my own boss, I don't want to give that up, but, well, I miss being a part of the government, too. It was all so much bigger, and they say it's getting better."
"And you believe that?"
Emilia couldn't quite hide her skepticism. "Well, all the suppliers say the palace is cracking down on bribery and corruption like never before, and this whole restructure shows they're thinking big again, you know. If the Emperor's showing an interest, I'm curious, I suppose. And it's not as though I'd be trapped there, not on a short-term contract. I'd like to work with Kiri." Emilia nodded. She didn't need to be a mind reader to see what Viorin had already decided. "I can see that," she said, once more squashing a pang of envy. Viorin looked up at her, bit her lip, looked away, and said, "But then I thought, well, if I know the administrative office inside out, surely you know the pages just as well? And I'd like the company. Someone to keep me balanced, you know." Emilia stared at her. Surely she couldn't mean. "I was wondering if you wanted to come too?" asked Viorin. Mumbled, really, at the table, not meeting Emilia's eyes. "I know you're retired, but it could be part-time, just for a month or two." She did mean. She lifted her face at last, and it was shining with abashed sincerity. Emilia was astonished at the strength and confusion of her own emotions in response. To go back up to the palace,
to perhaps be listened to, or perhaps not. Yes. No. Yes. I need to think about it, she said, though she knew her answer. She snorted. Sayodurja must be having fun. He always loved the drama. I hope he's looking after my boys and girls.
I've said I'll go and meet Kiri tomorrow morning, said Viorin. Is that enough time? She writes like she's in a hurry.
These private office types are always in a rush, said Amelia. I don't have to tell you that. I'll come and meet her, of course.
Viorin beamed her thanks. Amelia felt her own heart thudding in anticipation. Sod being retired. This would be fun.
I'm not saying I'll stay, mind, she temporized with her friend and herself.
But it'll be nice to see Kiri again.
Chapter 2. Something to keep you busy.
Amelia stood in front of her wardrobe, uncertain. She couldn't wear her old uniform. Sayodurja was head page now. And since she was absolutely not going to carry messages for anybody, she had better make sure no one got the wrong impression.
Are you sure this is a good idea, love? Said Hari lazily.
He had, indeed, slunk in late last night, self-conscious and miserable, but that seemed to be one of his natural mood downswings. As far as she could determine, this time his partner had called a halt first, and Hari was feeling bruised.
No, she said, but you're not the only one allowed to make mistakes.
He chuckled.
Ah, that's all right then, he said, then sighed. I'm not helping you, like, am I?
Amelia gave up thinking through the politics of various color combinations and grabbed her smartest non-work dress robes.
I didn't marry you for the company, she said, waggling her eyebrows at him. This was an old joke, and they both laughed.
I know, I know. I'm just sore because...
You'd hope to find me sitting here, bored out of my mind, ready to spend another 2 or 3 days in bed with you.
Amelia finished, dryly.
That too.
Hari smiled at her, the big, slow smile with a hint of melancholy that had snagged her attention long ago and still made her weak at the knees.
No, pet. It's just that I've been worrying about you, like. All that vim and nothing to do. I've not been here. I'm not good at looking out for you, am I?
And now you're being ridiculous, darling, said Amelia, drawing out her borrowed court accent to make him smile.
My happiness doesn't depend on you solving me like some kind of puzzle. Don't flatter yourself.
She pinned up her hair. How does that look? Hari pulled himself out of bed and came over to stand in front of her. He tucked a stray curl back behind one ear, kissed her soundly, and pronounced,
That'll do.
She laughed, flapped his hand lightly, and pushed him back towards the bed.
You stay there. Gus needs someone to make his god's-awful coffee for, she told him.
It was strange, leaving the house for work in full daylight, taking that familiar path up the hill towards the palace, around the noise and bustle of a city morning. Amelia walked slowly, enjoying the sense of purpose. She could always go back to being retired tomorrow. Viorin was already at the coffee shop they'd chosen for their rendezvous. She had also chosen to avoid her old palace uniform, and was wearing something smart and crisp in dark gray linen. She was acting casual enough, but Amelia saw the slight tremble in her hands. They were both anxious for this to work out, she realized, and both conscious of the treatment they'd had from the palace in the past.
Kiri's expecting us at the noon bell, said Viorin. I thought we should talk over what we might offer her first.
They did, comparing notes on their experience and expertise.
Viorin jotted down details in her slightly cramped scribal shorthand. Amelia, as she'd always done, kept track in her mind. The exercise was more heartening than she had expected.
They'd be fools to pass us up, said Viren firmly, and Emilia found herself nodding in agreement. Then, all at once, it was time to go. They walked together past the street market where the bureaucrats slipped out for lunch, up under the familiar flower-draped pagoda, and up the long winding road to the lower gates of the palace. It was almost as though no time had passed at all. At the gate, the guards glanced through the letter Viren showed them, took a quick look through their bags, and let them pass without demur. Viren led the way up across the first courtyard and into the main corridor, before her steps slowed.
"Do you know where we're going?"
Emilia asked.
"Kyrie didn't send directions," she replied. "I thought we could ask at Indrigan's private office. It's got to be somewhere up near there."
They kept walking, but Emilia kept her eye out and within a few minutes had found a familiar page who was willing to take a half second to direct them up to Kyrie's new offices. Disconcertingly, these turned out to be right up in the center of the palace, in the tower itself. Emilia led the way up the long, long flights of stairs, across landings and corridors that were increasingly grandly ornate. Viren had gone very quiet beside her. "Not long now," she said, as they passed the first of the Lord Magi's apartments. They reached the right landing eventually. When she realized where they were, even Emilia was somewhat daunted. She held her chin up and led Viren along past the great doors of the sun, the entrance to the imperial apartments themselves, trying to convince herself that this entire palace was still her stomping ground. "Sayamapa!" Emilia shook out of her abstraction to see her old friend, Sayasawa Saka, waving from the messenger station opposite.
"Hello, how are you?" she said, gladly. Then remembered herself and added, "I can't stop now. We're stepping in to see Saya Kalakiri. Do you know where she'll be?"
"Kiri's down that way, love," said Sayasawa Saka. "It's good to see you. Stop by later."
"Of course," said Emilia, feeling much better for seeing a friendly face.
Viren beside her flashed a nervous grin at Sayasawa Saka, but was practically vibrating with her desire to keep moving, so they left it at that. There were a number of offices on this corridor that curved around the outer walls of the tower, which Emilia remembered as being regarded with some suspicion a year or so ago. Some sort of curse, she thought. Whatever it was had evidently been cleared out now, because the first office they looked into was crammed with people. And there was Kyrie, tucked into a desk by the window, surrounded by a huddle of secretaries and analysts. Emilia stopped a few paces back from the crowd. She felt Viren hesitate beside her. Kyrie was definitely in charge of this meeting, and it sounded as though she was running them all through a budget with a friendly but implacable air. Even in the grayish-brown robes of the secretariat, Kyrie Kalakiri was a vibrant figure. Her dark hair was twisted up with a bright scarlet band, and her face was brilliant with laughter. She said something that Emilia couldn't quite catch, and the whole crowd laughed with her, then broke up as Kyrie shooed them away with exaggerated motions. As soon as there was space, she hopped to her feet and nearly bounced over to Emilia and Viren. "You came," she cried, offering them each a hug. "Oh, it's so good to see you. I thought we could have lunch first, if you liked. Then I'll take you through to the boss. We can't get out into town, I'm afraid. I could only keep a half hour free in my calendar. You would not believe how ridiculous that's getting. But still, the kitchen here is not bad, if you're happy with that."
"Of course," said Viren, sounding as dazed as Emilia felt at the flood of words.
"Congratulations on the job, Kyrie. How are you?" Kyrie rocked back on her heels and smiled with her whole self. "It's amazing," she said. "We're getting so much done." She led the way across to the canteen, chattering 19 to the dozen about the challenges of setting up a new private office. "Of course, having the Lord Emperor's full support makes it much easier," she added offhand, which gave Emilia almost as much of a jolt as the realization that they would be eating alongside so many members of the imperial household. She did her best not to gawp at the glamorous silk-clad attendants, or the splendidly muscled guards, though they were very much worth looking at, and she was already regretting the struggle she would have to do them justice when describing them to Hari later.
"Have you met the Glorious One?"
Viorin asked, her voice slightly hushed, as if in awe of the very subject. Emilia empathized. She had not been a devotee of the Imperial cult, but she had not grown up in the shadow of the necropolis for nothing. She reeled at the thought of an emperor being somebody who might do anything as mundane as meet with his officials.
"Yes," said Kiri simply. "I'm deputizing for his secretary, after all."
Emilia found she was frantically trying to construct a plausible sequence of events that might have taken Kiri from a solid place as a leading junior secretary in the Minister-in-Chief's office to this extraordinary position, and failing utterly. She thought back to a dozen lunches, where they had all slipped out together to the street market. Kiri had often been strained by her role, always working hard at it, but she had been junior to even Cleofort M'dang back then, and he was a fifth-degree secretary, and most definitely not the kind of person who would ever be admitted to the presence. The food, unsurprisingly, was exquisite. Kiri explained, with justifiable smugness, that this canteen was staffed and run out of the back of the Imperial kitchens as a training ground for the Imperial chefs. Then she abruptly seemed to realize that she had been doing most of the talking.
"How is retirement treating you?" she asked Emilia.
Emilia hesitated, wondering how to answer, and her expression must have spoken for her because both the other women sputtered into laughter. She had to laugh with them.
"I hate it," she confessed. "I have all these projects, and none of them are the slightest bit stretching. I like my allotment, I like having time to bake and plan things with my neighbors, but..." "The days are long," she sighed, saw the flicker of concern on Viorin and Kiri's faces, and recovered her smile to reassure them.
"That's why I'm here, I suppose," she said.
"I'm sure we can find something to keep you busy," said Kiri, in a passable imitation of Princess Indrigan's dry tones, and changed the subject by asking Viorin about her work with the trading houses. Viorin's recent commissions had mostly involved reorganizing offices of often highly self-important people, and it was a treat to hear her stories of unimpressive egos that she had ushered, gently, or kicking and screaming, as appropriate, into more sensible working practices.
"After nannying Marylow for so long, there wasn't much that could shock me," she said. "I've never thought all that experience wrangling nobles would come in so handy. Though it's easier with the traitors. Some of them are nobles, I suppose, but they feel that they've earned their wealth, too, so they have to respect work, even when they're terrible at it." Something in the phrasing inspired Emilia to ask,
"And how many nobles are you wrangling, Kiri? Your new boss, the Imperial Secretary. I hear he's a hard worker, too."
Kiri seemed more struck by this very natural question than Emilia would have expected. Her face lit up just a little, and her eyes went wide, but she popped another rice ball into her mouth as though she wanted to think before replying. Emilia traded glances with Viorin. How interesting.
"That attractive, huh?"
asked Viorin, batting her eyes at Kiri, who just laughed a little too hard.
"You tell me," she said, wiping her eyes.
"I have arranged a brief chat with him in a few minutes. He's the one really running this restructure, for his radiancy, of course." A broad grin slipped out across her face, as if in spite of herself.
"I think you'll like him," she said.
"Well, we certainly have to meet anyone who has this effect on you," said Emilia, amusement and concern warring for her attention. It would do Kiri good to have something as human as a crush on her boss, but it was hardly sensible to get involved with any kind of actual flirtation with someone as high-powered and well-connected as the Imperial Secretary. Kiri showed them where to clear their plates near the serving tables. She picked up a couple of sandwich rolls and a coffee, which someone had left next to the rack of trays, and at Viorin's curious look said, "It's for the boss. He forgets to eat otherwise." As Kiri led the way back into the corridor, Viorin looked across and raised her eyebrows. Emilia shrugged, almost as if making sure this man isn't taking advantage of our Curie had not just shot up to the top of her reasons to take the contract with the palace. Time to change the subject again. And there was one thing that Emilia really did want to know. "So," she asked, "whatever happened to the last member of our little gang? Is Siop Ndong still making trouble somewhere?"
Curie made a strange sound in her throat, a choked kind of laugh.
"You could say that," she said, and led them into another office. This one was even smaller than the last, and, if possible, even more crammed full of people in secretarial and analyst robes. There was, however, one long desk piled with orderly stacks of paper that had only one person sitting behind it. Siop Ndong did not stir as Curie slipped the rolls and coffee down beside him. She glanced back at them, eyes sparkling, and made a shh gesture. He was evidently entirely absorbed in his report, because he managed to take a bite and sip before it occurred to him to look up, first blinking at the food and drink in his hands, and then smiling broadly at his visitors.
"Siamapa! Siahasia, you came back!"
he cried, dropping his lunch to jump up and come round the desk towards them, where he faltered a little at the totally flabbergasted expressions on their faces.
"Dear gods," said Viorin fervently, "don't tell me they let you in front of the Emperor."
"Well, I could hardly serve as his secretary otherwise," said Siop Ndong, falsely demure, with perhaps a touch of genuine uncertainty behind it.
"Curie," said Emilia calmly, "I am going to destroy you. I hope you know that."
Curie dissolved into helpless laughter.
"I'm not sorry," she managed. "The looks on your faces!"
And then Emilia was laughing too. They were all laughing, so hard that she felt tears start. It was infectious. A few of the nearby secretaries had joined in too, and most of the room was smiling.
"Come on," said Siop Ndong. "Let me find you a seat, and we can talk about why you're here."
There were enough chairs around the desk to make it clear that he held impromptu meetings here fairly regularly, and there were an odd enough assortment that she was sure the whole setup had come together by chance. Viorin took a desk chair that surprised her with a swivel mechanism. Emilia found a high-backed wooden thing with elaborate carvings that made her sit stiffly upright, and Curie pulled over a folding padded chair that was covered in threadbare but glorious embroidery of peach and teal birds and fruit.
"You're really the Imperial Secretary?"
Emilia couldn't help but ask.
"I really am," said Siop Ndong.
His voice was not smug, which would have been entirely understandable, but tinged with an emotion Emilia found totally unfamiliar coming from him. Looking at his face, she thought it might be awe. His explanation would have been brief, but Curie broke in to prod and clarify and make sure they had the full picture. Siop Ndong had, characteristically, gotten himself kicked off the secondment to General Revillain's headquarters for an excess of honesty. This happened on the same day the Sun on Earth dismissed a secretarial candidate, and the Master of Offices, who had been nurturing a grudge against him for a while, had taken the opportunity to promote him with malice aforethought. So far, so predictable. Viorin had confessed once that she was afraid Marylow would find a way to threaten Ndong, and sending him as a secretary candidate to the Emperor was undoubtedly an attempt on both his career and his life. The Glorious One was worshipped as a god, surrounded by layers of magic and mundane taboos, etiquette and ceremonial requirements, and notoriously difficult to please. At best, a mistake could be automatic dismissal, not just from the role, but from the Imperial service. At worst, those breaking the taboos could be blinded or even executed, either by the direct magical backwash in the moment or by the priest wizards when they came to clear up the aftermath. What was impossible to grasp was just how and why this attempt had backfired so spectacularly that Mary had, according to rumor, fled the palace in fear of his life. One of the things Emilia liked about Siop Ndong,
had liked since the first day he turned up in the Pages' hall. A mysterious, grumpy stranger with a penchant for paperwork and a knack for soothing difficult drunks, was that he paid remarkably little attention to any of the complex rules of etiquette that governed almost every interaction in the palace. He picked a direction and kept going, and made his suggestions with such candid simplicity that you could be carried along in his wake for days before you realized quite how radical his solutions were. Nobody else would have thought to promote Amelia to head up the hall. She was not entirely sure that anybody else in the palace thought the common pages were even literate, let alone capable of running a major logistical operation. But Xiaotan Dang had made it happen. She would not have expected this attitude to serve him well in the presence of the last emperor of Astandalus and lord of Zunith. About his appointment, Xiaotan Dang said, "After a brief trial, His Radiancy was kind enough to confirm me as his secretary, and I've been serving in that capacity ever since." Amelia was close enough to see Kiri kick him under the desk. "What my esteemed and revered boss means to say," Kiri said, "is that he astonished the tower and the service and everybody in the palace by actually doing the job. And when they picked their jaws up off the floor, the emperor and the minister-in-chief backed him to the hilt. And it was a mess. Did you know the Glorious One didn't even have a calendar? Nobody was coordinating anything for him."
"You must have loved that," Amelia said, thinking of the glee with which Xiaotan Dang had torn into the mass of unsorted paperwork in her old office.
"So what do you need from us?" asked Viorin. "That's my part," said Kiri. "It took a while, but even the mighty Mdang has been forced to admit that he can't fix the entire government all on his lonesome. The emperor has signed off on a budget for us to set up the office here, and he's given Cleofer permission to propose changes to the service. I'm looking for people to help with that part, since Princess Indergan decided to dissolve the administrative office. We're feeding in on its replacement, so I thought of you." Viorin looked intrigued, but asked skeptically, "And the minister-in-chief listens to you?" Kiri shrugged. "We're speaking for the tower. Cleofer makes sure the emperor is on board." Amelia found herself trying not to stare at her friend again. Kiri had always had poise and a certain sparkling charm, with her big dark eyes and crooked grin. She had never before radiated this level of confidence, enthusiasm, joy, even. It was as infectious as her earlier laughter. It made Amelia want to say yes, want to pitch in and help solve problems and scrabble together through the snake pit, unraveling all its knots until the world was a better place.
"The emperor wants a government that works for the people of Zunith," said Xiaotan Dang, as earnestly as ever, as calmly as if speaking of the emperor's personal views on anything, was not bordering on heresy. "Princess Indergan's devolving most of the powers to appoint out to the ministries, but I want someone to check that who knows how Mary's office actually worked. And, Sayamapa, I have some ideas about what could sit with the pages, about promotion routes and induction into the service. But I need to test them with someone who understands the work the pages do. Will you help us, please?"
"Of course," said Viorin at once. Xiaotan Dang lit up with delight, but not, alas, even the slightest hint of personal interest. Amelia managed not to roll her eyes, though it was a near thing. She was absolutely going to take Viorin to meet Hari and get his advice, and perhaps some introductions. And then all three of them looked at her, pleadingly.
"I need to think about it," she told them.
The answer was yes, of course, but it would do them good to be forced to give her space, also.
"If I do sign up, I have one stipulation," she added.
"No, two. I'm not making any new oaths to the Glorious One." Xiaotan Dang looked obscurely hurt, as though this was a personal slight.
"Ah."
Amelia could almost feel the clunk as the penny dropped at the back of her brain. That actually made a disturbing amount of sense, come to think of it.
The man was incapable of doing anything by halves. Poor Viren.
Secondly, she went on, I want to see you, all of you, outside the palace at least once a month. Lunch, drinks, I don't care. We can start this evening if you like.
Kiri and Viren enthusiastically seconded this motion. Dang agreed more doubtfully, which didn't surprise her. He had never been as regular as the rest of them about meeting up, and, well, he had always been more of a colleague than a friend. If she could get him out of the building once or twice a year, she'd take that as a victory. It was not until they were most of the way down the hill outside the palace that Amelia realized how quickly she had, effectively, caved into the general excitement. Seeing the bounce in Viren's steps, she could hardly regret it. Later, at the Sun and Glory, Kiri bought the first round.
I owe you, she said.
Amelia regarded her fondly. Kiri was still in her secretarial robes, though she had left her hat up at the palace somewhere. From top to toe, she looked like any other secretary in the pub. A little scruffy at the end of the day, perhaps. There was a smudge of ink around her writing fingers, a matching dark swatch on the robes themselves, where her hands rested, and wisps of hair were escaping the tight dark bun at the back of her head. She seemed entirely unaware of the space that opened up around them as people noticed her, and the sidelong admiring glances from the other bureaucrats at the bar.
I can't believe that you didn't tell us, said Viren.
I'm not sorry, Kiri replied, laughing again. It was perfect.
Is Siop Ndang joining us?
Amelia asked, though she already knew the answer. Kiri sighed. He said he might be along later, so he might show up. He's very absorbed in his work.
And in the Emperor?
Kiri laughed again, a little ruefully. You saw that, did you? He gets misty-eyed whenever you mention his radiancy. The man is besotted. And the work. Well, you remember what he's like when he sets his mind to something. Like that, only more so.
And you?
Amelia asked, as gently as she could. Oh, we get along excellently, said Kiri, brightening. I'm having so much fun. Amelia thought about herself and Hari. Sometimes a partnership was not what you expected. Sometimes it was bigger than two people. It had never occurred to her before to think that Kiri and Siop Ndang were alike in needing a project. But then Kiri had always thrown herself into her work so smoothly that it caused scarcely a ripple. No wonder the two of them worked so well together. Siop Ndang was likely a lost cause. But Amelia felt, looking from Viren to Kiri, that she had a duty to ensure that the rest of these ridiculous souls made at least some friends outside their obsession. She sipped her drink, pondered for a moment, and then said, There's a new show down at the riverbank this week. Something classical, I think, about Aurelius Magnus. Hari's been working on the set, says it's good. Fancy giving it a try? The end. If you've enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this Podfix post. Thank you for listening.